Welcome to Clinical Conversations 104th podcast. It comes to you from Journal Watch, your guide to the most important current clinical literature for almost 25 years. Go to the website at jwatch.org. I'm Joe Elia. It's October 8th, 2010. This time we talk with the author of a study that may settle the question of whether using proton pump inhibitors with clopidogrel increases cardiovascular risks in dual antiplatelet therapy. Before that, I'd like to welcome as co-host Dr. Danielle Bowen-Schurer. Dr. Schurer is an associate editor for Physicians First Watch, and she's also a hospitalist and an assistant professor at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. Welcome to the conversation, Danielle.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Looks like we have an interesting conversation this morning with Dr. Bott, so let's see if we can resolve a controversy. Earlier this week, the New England Journal of Medicine published a randomized double-blind study examining the safety of giving the proton pump inhibitor omeprazole to patients on dual antiplatelet therapy with clopidogrel and aspirin. It has been feared that omeprazole somehow interacts with clopidogrel, reducing its effectiveness and thus causing an increase in cardiovascular events. The new data show otherwise, though. We have as our guest Dr. Deepak Bhatt, the paper's first author. Dr. Bhatt is an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and is chief of cardiology in the Boston VA healthcare system. He directs the Integrated Interventional Cardiovascular Program at the Boston VA and at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Bhatt.
Well, thank you for having me.
Briefly, how did this controversy get started?
Well, that's a great question. There were a number of different studies that had led to concerns about an interaction between clopidogrel and proton pump inhibitors. The first line of evidence, so to speak, had to do with so-called ex vivo studies, that is, studying platelets or blood, essentially in a test tube would be one way of thinking about it, that showed that there was an interaction between some or all proton pump inhibitors, depending on the study, that giving a proton pump inhibitor to a patient would diminish the active metabolite levels of clopidogrel and therefore blunt the antiplatelet effect of clopidogrel. And these studies weren't all consistent, but for the most part, especially with omeprazole, did seem to indicate there was an adverse interaction on the platelet level between clopidogrel and some PPIs. Following that, there were a number of observational studies, non-randomized studies, that showed an association between proton pump inhibitor use and concomitant clopidogrel use and a higher event rate, a higher cardiovascular event rate than patients just on clopidogrel. But the problem with these observational studies, as is often the case, is that of confounding. That is, patients who got proton pump inhibitors on average were sicker than the ones that didn't get proton pump inhibitors because, of course, doctors typically would put the older or sicker patient on a proton pump inhibitor, not the younger, healthier one. And therefore, it was not really certain whether there was or was not an interaction based on the observational data. The only randomized clinical trial data on the topic come in the Cogent study, and in that study, we did not find any adverse cardiovascular interaction between clopidogrel and proton pump inhibitors. The specific dose and type of proton pump inhibitor was omeprazole 20 milligrams a day, but I think the message is probably one that can be extrapolated to other proton pump inhibitors as well.
So some critics, I think, would argue that, you know, the relatively short follow-up may not be enough time to figure out if the risk of cardiovascular complication is different between the groups and that the study may have been underpowered to detect any differences. How would you respond to that criticism?
I think those are legitimate criticisms. The study was terminated prematurely because the industry sponsor of it actually lost their financing during the global financial crisis, and therefore the planned number of patients wasn't enrolled. So the initially planned number of patients was, as we'd initially planned for 3,000 and enrolled some 3,800 or so, but then we had increased it to 4,000 and then 5,000 patients as the trial was ongoing, and we didn't reach those larger numbers. The trial also ended sooner than we would have anticipated because because of that financial issue. Nevertheless, I think that the study findings should provide reassurance to clinicians, because the time that patients are at highest risk of a cardiovascular event is soon after their stent or their acute coronary syndrome. And that's the time period we captured these patients, that is, you know, for the several months after those events. So I think by exposing patients to the combination of clopidogrel proton pump inhibitor versus clopidogrel plus placebo during that period in which they were most vulnerable, if there really were a large and important adverse interaction, adverse cardiovascular interaction, we should have seen it. So, yes, you know, the confidence intervals are still broad, but I think the fact that the hazard ratio for cardiovascular events is 0.99, that the event curves are essentially superimposable, should still provide some reassurance. And the data, albeit imperfect, should still trump observational data, which should in turn trump surrogate marker data.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in your professional opinion, based on this level of research, do you think we can go back to prescribing omeprazole and clopidogrel now?
Well, that is a great question, and I think, of course, clinicians have to use their best judgment and synthesize all the data that's coming in from multiple different angles, which can be tough to do when there's lots of different data coming in from multiple places. But I think if a doctor feels that clopidogrel is indicated in a patient and omeprazole is indicated in a patient, that it's fine to use both. I might just point out that our study did use 20 milligrams of omeprazole. The interaction studies that have been done with omeprazole, for example, that led to the label change for clopidogrel, that was an 80 milligram omeprazole dose, so that was higher than what we studied. There have also been interaction studies with 40 milligrams of omeprazole that show a lesser interaction with respect to ex vivo platelet surrogate marker testing, but still do show some level of interaction. So I might say, you know, use the lowest dose possible of the proton pump inhibitor, which for most primary care physicians and cardiologists would be 20 milligrams a day anyway. The 80 of omeprazole really is something that is typically for gastroenterologists to use for short durations of time. As far as whether one should use another proton pump inhibitor instead, I can't comment from this study, but I myself would be willing to extrapolate our findings and say that a clopidogrel and proton pump inhibitors, at least, you know, unless you're going to very high doses, but at least in the dose range we were studying, there doesn't appear to be a detectable cardiovascular interaction. Now, I should just point out one thing, that the specific formulation that we studied, the company that funded the study, which is no longer a company that exists, that was a delayed release omeprazole. So it was clopidogrel plus a delayed release omeprazole. And one could legitimately ask, does that affect the results? That is, do the delayed release kinetics of that formulation that we studied, can you extrapolate from that to off-the-shelf clopidogrel and omeprazole? And, I mean, I can't directly answer that because that's not the experiment we did, but I think that it is probably safe to extrapolate, and off-the-shelf clopidogrel and off-the-shelf 20 of omeprazole, I think, likely would show the same cardiovascular safety profile that we showed in Cogent.
Dr. Bhatt, so next week, clinicians who are thinking of using this combination have a dilemma. The absolute risks from omeprazole and clopidogrel were rather small to begin with, weren't they? There was a trend that was shown, but it wasn't like 10 or 20% of patients were having these cardiovascular events. And in fact, the patients under treatment were under treatment for cardiovascular causes, weren't they?
So the cardiovascular event rates within the Cogent study, what we presented in the paper were six-month event rates, and the rate of adverse cardiovascular events in the omeprazole arm was 4.9%, and the placebo arm was 5.7%. But that difference, while numerically in favor of omeprazole, wasn't statistically significant. So it was a hazard ratio of 0.99, with confidence intervals that, frankly, are broad. I mean, they range from 0.68 to 1.44. But I think, you know, it's reassuring that event rate is that hazard ratio is 0.99. Those event rates, though, I wouldn't categorize necessarily as low. I mean, those are six-month event rates. So we're talking about annual event rates of about 10-11%. in the placebo arm.
Okay.
So I think we did, in fact, capture a cardiovascular population that was, you know, not a trivial cardiovascular risk. I think the other important part of the study, though, is the gastrointestinal part. I mean, in fact, the primary purpose of this study was to see if omeprazole reduced GI bleeding in patients at average risk of GI bleeding, not those that were specifically risk-enriched for GI bleeding. And indeed, for that primary endpoint of the study, we found a significant reduction in GI bleeding. So it's not just that we didn't see any cardiovascular interaction. That's true, and that's very interesting and timely, given all the discussion about clopidogrel-PPI interactions. But the bigger message, in my opinion, and the larger contribution to medicine beyond just this question of is there or isn't there an interaction, is that for the first time in a randomized clinical trial, we've shown that a proton pump inhibitor given prophylactically to patients at average risk of GI bleeding, granted they're on antiplatelet therapy, but otherwise at average risk of GI bleeding, reduces the risk of future GI bleeding. So that, I think, is actually the really big message from Cogent.
Okay. Well, it sounds like there is some reassurance out there now as a result of your trial, and want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Absolutely, my pleasure. And I think, you know, this is going to remain an area of interest, and I think there's going to be a lot more scientific inquiry in this area. So I would urge your viewers and listeners to stay tuned.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
Yes, excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Here's a look at the week's top stories. First of all, some good news, we think, for those getting the Northern Hemisphere trivalent flu shot. It turns out that the viral candidates included in the mixture are good matches for the viruses circulating in the Southern Hemisphere, which is just coming out of its winter flu season. Next, Apgar scores. Low scores at 5 minutes are associated with an increased incidence of cerebral palsy by age 5, according to a BMJ article. Compared with scores of 10, scores under 3 had an odds ratio for cerebral palsy of about 50, adjusted for birth weight. The researchers say their findings suggest that the development of cerebral palsy is linked to at least some of the factors assessed in the Apgar. An editorialist says that newborns with low scores should be watched carefully for signs of encephalopathy. And finally, the Annals of Internal Medicine carries a study that finds adults who've survived a childhood cancer aren't being screened at recommended intervals, especially those at highest risk. The risk comes from having received radiation, and among those patients, rates of screening were all well under 50% for colon, skin, and breast cancers. I guess the take-home message here is that even cancer survivors need screening too. We've included a link to the Annals abstract and to the Children's Oncology Group guidelines on follow-up. Well, that's it for Conversation 104. Earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time. Thanks for listening.